Support for KMUW's Into Music podcast comes from McClelland, reminding listeners that Frank Sinatra coined the word skibbity in Strangers in the Night, which you can listen to in their downtown Wichita showroom. More info on McClelland's innovative sound, lighting, and video technology can be found at maxsound.com.
Hi, I'm Jed Bodwin, and you're listening to Into Music from the KMUW Studios, part of the NPR Podcast Network. My guest on this episode is Sergio Vega of the post-hardcore band Quicksand. The latest Quicksand album, Bring On the Psychics, is out July 17th via Equal Vision Records. Vega recently spoke with me about the making of the album, how much of the material has already found its way into Quicksand's live sets, how he came to choose bass as his instrument, and the influence that Quicksand has had on other bands since its formation in 1990. That's Sergio Vega of the band Quicksand on Into Music, coming up now. I know you went out and did some European dates.
Yes.
Earlier this summer. How did that go?
It went really well. The shows were fun. We did some festival shows. We played with Touche Amour, did some headlining shows, and in general, just had a great time. And it's cool because at the point in which, you know, we were overseas, we have like five songs from the album, you know, like released. And so we got to play a lot of it, which is something that we're super excited about.
Yeah.
And the reaction was good. So that was also something to be, you know, thankful for.
Because I was curious about that, you know, because this just seems like an album that was meant to be played live.
Yeah. Well, in truth, that was often like when we're playing, you know, like, or when we're writing and we're doing things, songs come together a lot of ways. It's a very collaborative effort, but the songs kind of start out in coming from all different angles. And it's usually just the things that we are excited about, you know, so we're like, oh, these are ideas we're excited about. I think everyone has their personal influences. Everyone has their personal, even like maybe like thought process, things they want to get across. And then there's the collective things that we want to get across, but usually it's not something that we discuss very much. But in the case of this album, you know, we set into it with the idea of like, with a couple of like bullet points. And one of them was like something that was like, we wanted something that we'd be excited to, you know, to play live. And that all kind of had a very, you know, transferable quality that they would go over well live, or we would at least be excited to play live. And so, you know, I'm glad that you pick up on that, because that was definitely one of the few conscious things that we entered this with.
You know, when I was going to concerts as a teenager, that was the thing. Somebody had a new album out and you're like, oh, what are they going to play? And they play like four songs. And then there was this period of time, I think, where bands got away from that, where it's like, nobody wants to hear the new stuff. And you went out and threw like a series of new songs in and demonstrated that they can still go over, even if people aren't super familiar with them necessarily.
Yeah. And I think all, you're right in the sense that like, there's a fear, or not a fear, there's been like a caution to giving people what they expect or what they want, and, you know, in quotes. And I think that sometimes that's short-sighted, you know, in all ways, because there's a reason why somebody, you know, or people are drawn to your art or to what you're doing in the first place. And you wind up falling into a trap of like appeasing that, you know, too. And I think that it does have its rewards, but there's also something to be said for the challenge of like, what is that thing, you know, like what is that spark that got them interested in the first place, and how do you chase that with new, you know, with who you are now and what you're doing now. There's also the third path of like, I just do what I like and I'm playing what I like and I don't care, you know, it's going to be what it's going to be. And we wanted to have an urgency and excitement and something that could transfer live, because in all the records we've made since we've returned, you know, like we're very proud of them and we love them, but we didn't consider that so much. So you wind up like going with like, oh, well, what is going over live? Well, live, what is happening? You know, and then you wind up with a set that's kind of an amalgamation of everything that you think or feel could work. You know, which again goes back to what you're saying. You start to lean on things that you know work.
I have friends who work at venues, and they'll say sometimes that ticket holders will come up and complain to them like that a band didn't play thus and such, as though they have some control over it. And it was like, you know, that's the thing. It's like I never, whoever I went to see, like I never thought that I had control over what they played. I went to see what they brought.
I think, you know, I think there's a couple of things, and especially like when, depending on the scene, depending on the thing, or depending on the level of passion that you have for the artist, you develop expectations, you develop things. You know, there's things, you know, like artists and or as fans, you know, like I read something, I think my wife was telling me about, I think Blonde Redhead, and they were talking about how often when you make new material, it's very hard for people because people who love your band, they think about, they have thoughts or expectations as to what it should be and how it should sound because they're invested and they care. You know, and I don't mean this as a knock. So when they're confronted with the band's new material, which is born from whatever the hell they're into, you know, it can often be, you know, like it's just not clicking right away. You know, it's just not. And I've heard them, this is not what I expected, this is not what I thought. And they're not excited about that. But I've been around now long enough to see how also that changes over time. You know, and with records I've done with Quicksand, with records I've done, you know, with other bands, you know, I've watched how songs or albums have become accepted and loved over time. Because people had a chance to sit with it and grow with it, and they maybe have their experiences with it. So it's like, you know, it's cool. But, you know, back to Bring on the Psychics, it's like I've never come into a record with a group, you know, the three of us to say like, we want like exciting live and we want these things. Outside of that, there's no rules, but we just want that. So it's been a fun experiment or a fun strategy. And it's really nice to hear you say that, you know, it sounds like it's meant to be played live, and it's nice to see people react to it so quickly. And so I think that's it's a proof of concept. Like you don't have to be stuck in the past.
Speaking of that, I mean, get to it, right? For me, yes, it has that immediacy of a live show, but it's also kind of like this statement that I think goes with the record as a whole, which is like, this is life.
Yeah, there's like I think the overall like sense of urgency and immediacy was something that kind of informed everything. So whether it be the music, even the arrangements, you know, like I thinking about music, I think, you know, it's like you break it down, like you have your riffs and then you have the way that they're arranged in hopes of giving those initial riffs or those the sparks, you know, the best chance of being understood or heard or reacted to. And then you have like your lyrics, you have your melodies, you know, they're separate. And how you approach those things, you know, like they evoke things in people. But this was and even yourself, right? So this is the first thing where everything, like all the aspects of the what makes up a song, you know, we're informed by a sense of like energy and urgency and immediacy. Like, I think if there was any sort of thing that we all brought, you know, was that understanding and, you know, so every bit of it. Well, whoever's coming up with a riff, whoever's playing off of that person's riff, Alan's rhythms, everything was like informed by that one word, I guess. You know, I think that's the simplest, you know, reduction.
Is some of that kind of a reflection of where you are all at too in life? It's like we've seen this stuff and we have this band, we still have this band, and let's kind of embrace that and run with it.
I don't know. You know, I think that could be like different for all of us. You know, like I think that one of the cool things is like we all have different outlooks and different things. You know, like we've been in band for a long time. We've been musicians for a long time. If you ask, I think, you know, like Alan, our drummer, you know, I think he'd be the most like thoughtful of like, oh yeah, you know, like here I am at this point in my life, you know, still doing this. How long does one do this? You know, and we need to make the most of it now. As for me, I don't think about that as much because I'm always looking at like for artists, I look for examples of people who are like decades older that are still doing it. So I just go like, oh, wow, like you can still do it. You look at someone like Les Paul, or you look at, you know, people who are in their 90s making music, and whether or not they're making new albums that people care about, you know, but that they're doing it and they're getting a sense of joy and fulfillment from that. Then so I don't feel that as much, you know. And you know, like Walter, I think, you know, like he has a lot of things going on. And I think, you know, for him, from our discussions, it was just us thinking about different stages in our life and how we felt and tapping into the entirety of our existence and being like, oh, like this is, there was this time when I was really like, my head was, you know, in this place. And what would that person say, or how would that person react? And, you know, so it's all coming from different places, but like what we all agreed on was like urgency and excitement and something live and, you know, something, you know, like heavy, but in our own way, you know, just little things that like, and then after that, you kind of just turn off and then you just kind of create because I don't think that things should be too conscious, you know, it's like, or too thought out. I don't think that's bad for everyone or anyone. I just think that it's more interesting for me to kind of plant a couple of seeds, forget about it, and then let things happen.
We should also talk about Days You Run To, which is that little moment of difference on the record, which is, I think, also one of those things that I think, I don't know, for me, I always love that where it's like you get this and then you just got that one or maybe two songs where it's like, oh, that takes me to a different place.
I like that song because it's one of the last songs. I mean, I love all of them, right? But it's one of the last ones that came together. And it was born like the main part was born from a bass line that I had thought maybe, oh, this is gonna be like really sick and heavy and like have to, you know, like just kind of like if you can imagine just the ba-da-da-da-da, you know, but you could hear it as like something heavier and interpreted totally different. In my mind, in its inception, I thought like this is gonna be something like that. And then Alan, you know, played what he played to it, and Walter heard it totally differently too. And where it got brought to was something really pretty and really, and so it still kind of like bumps and it still has this movement, but it's definitely lighter. And then I think with that, once that happened, I was like, oh, this is super cool. And I think we fully embraced like, I mean, to me, we fully embraced a love for Pink Floyd. That's kind of always, there's like throughout our career and all of our records, there's little songs that kind of like have always been informed or, you know, influenced by certain Pink Floyd songs. But I think this in the chorus is the most forward. And obviously our love for like classic shoegaze in the orthodox sense, you know, and like not where it is now, but like what it, yeah, when the term first, you know, was born, like that stuff is very much in your face. And you know, it's pretty, but it's still bumps, so I like that.
It's so strange to me. Shoegaze has like permeated so many different genres, like metal bands in the last couple of years. I'd say last decade. It's always like there's like a shoegaze element that crept in there. And it's like, if you would have told me that 20 years ago that, yeah, metal bands are going to fuse shoegaze into their music, I would have been, that's nuts.
I mean, it's true, and it happened early on. I mean, in the post-hardcore scene, obviously, like Quicksand, thanks to Tom Capone turned us on to the Isn't Anything record. Like, I think, and it took us a while to even get into, you know, to really wrap our heads around it, and you know, and you start really hearing these things and that those effects, and then they start, you kind of want to play with those things. You know, it just inspire. It's inspiring. And then you still have your heavy underpinning. And I think over time it's kind of like word of mouth or just people finding these records out. And there's nothing, it's a lot of fun to have effects. You know, it's a lot of fun to play with these things. You know, that's something that was found like even early on and started to, you know, work its way into like Deftones and stuff. And like, and now it's become to where the word and the as a genre, it's morphed so much. That I, you know, I ha I have to do that with a lot of things, you know, with a lot of terms in the world. It's like you realize that things move. So like what is considered shoegaze now to me, I think is shoegaze adjacent or inspired by. But you know, it's not my call.
Well, I have a question too about the writing process, which is that you mentioned like having that bass line for that tune and hearing it, and then the other guys hearing it differently. I don't know, I think about like with writing sometimes, right? Somebody will make a suggestion to me about something I've written, and as a younger person, I was like, well, no, I gotta hold on to how that was. And then you learn over time that sometimes you just gotta let it be what it is.
Yeah. And I think like the writing process is, it's everything, you know, like there's the possibility for someone to come in with like the sketch for a song. There's a possibility for someone to come in with a song and say, oh, here, can you try playing this? There's a possibility of things coming from a jam. You know, you walk in to rehearsal, two guys are there, third person comes in, and it's like, holy shit. You know, and you just start playing off of that, or just one person riffing, you know. So all of it, we're open to all of the ways, but I think that like one of the things that is cool is like what you said, the not being too stuck on things, because you know you learn like, hey, explore different ways. You know, you can record things. You're not really like locked in. It's not like anything's etched in stone. To where you can, where you have to like die on a hill for the interpretation of a part, yeah. And I mean, it's also the fun of collaboration. It's like the idea of being in a band and collaborating is that something comes into being that wouldn't come into being without those people involved. So that always requires a lot of, you know, somebody's always going to be a little confused. Someone's going to be a little bit like, what's happening? And then at the end, you say, oh, shit, all right, I get it. You know, I get what's happening. And I think over the years, we've learned to arrive to that quicker, you know, so we don't have to be like, oh, well, but you know, or man, why are you telling me what to do? Or, you know, like this song is just too developed to work on. We're just happy and excited and, you know, and like what's going on. So we're not too concerned about. About like, yeah, like fighting for moments.
I also wanted to ask you about bass itself. You have that groove that you bring. What was it about bass that was like it for you?
What it was initially was like when I was going into junior high school, you know, that's when you start to like get into like instrument classes and things like that. And honestly, through television and my family, it kind of steered me towards bass because I have an older cousin who's a pianist, he's a musician, and he messed with around with a lot of different kinds of music, like Latin music or like early electronic music or just kinds of things. But he had an interesting little trio where it was him and a guy who played guitar who was like a metal rocker dude, and then he had a guy who played bass who was just like this cool guy. So I thought he was cool. And I was like, oh, so that was like the first kind of like thing. And then I used to like watch a lot of reruns of like the Partridge Family. And then I thought, oh, you know, look at Danny here. He's like the mischievous, cool one, you know, and he's playing a bass. And I was like, all right, cool, that's cool. And then Tom and Jerry reruns, you know, like the one where Tom is playing the upright bass and like wooing the girl, singing as you as you're my baby. I was like, oh, they, you know, so all these things was like, all right, I associate bass with like cool kind of things. And that was it. You know, so when I went to junior high school, I went up in, you know, in orchestra and I chose bass.
So you had that real musical training from there. You weren't kind of like fighting it out in the bedroom. You had some like, hey, this is how
I
music
mean,
works.
junior high school, you know, so like that you're playing pop in circumstance, you're doing basic things, you're playing whole notes, half notes, you know, like not really. But in there, I went up with a little, and again, with a little trio that was an instrumental trio, and we learned a couple of Hall & Oates songs on our own. And that was fun. So we played a couple of times for in, you know, in the auditorium for during whenever they were bringing, you know, like had auditorium things going on anyways. So we got a chance to perform a couple of times, And then that was it. So like when I got into a couple of years later, when I got into punk and then hardcore, I hadn't really been playing bass that much, but I was like, yeah, I play bass. And I just started, making bands or joining bands as the bass player. That was it. So I'm not in any way, I have very some lessons, but not enough to say. And it didn't transfer over.
When did you kind of know that Quicksand had like an impact on other musicians and was kind of an influence? When did you get a sense of that?
I don't know. Like, I don't know about it. I guess of some years in, but initially, I think the goal was to kind of like push the envelope a little bit and kind of break out of, like where we were at, not in a major way, but just kind of adding, here's an experiment and like pushing the envelope. I think it was some time before you started to notice, like, oh, his generation of bands that are kind of like not pushing the envelope in itself is anything, but more like you could hear, like, oh, I hear like that sound, you could hear the sound kind of thing. And then when like post-hardcore started to become a thing, and there was us, and there was like Into Another, and you start to see bands crop up, and you're, oh, you can hear. You say, okay, like I hear that, like bands are slowing down a little bit, bands are kind of doing, for lack of a better term, like more like groove kind of heavy rhythm section led stuff. And so yeah, you notice. But then like I personally didn't think too much of it because I'm someone who's heavily influenced, and you just realize like, oh, then now you're adding to the conversation. So like things that heavily inspire me, and you're not trying to copy it per se, but try to like draw from what is exciting about it and bring that to your thing because you love it. So like I think it's nice to be able to now throw something into the stream that people can pick up on. It's like, we're inspired by things, and to inspire people, then you're like, that's cool.
You've been listening to a conversation with Sergio Vega of Quicksand. The band's new album, Bring On the Psychics, is out July 17th via Equal Vision Records. You can learn more about the band, the album, and their upcoming live shows at quicksandnyc.com. You can learn more about this podcast and all programming on our station by visiting our website, kmuw.org. Send us your questions and comments at info@kmuw.org and find all the latest programming notes on that website as well. Thanks again for listening, and as always, we'd like to remind you that our theme music is composed and performed by Torin Anderson.